It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
Welcome, everyone, to the New American Dream radio show. I'm Chuck Gregory. My co-host is Mike Pelichek, an American writer. We bring you news and views you wouldn't see in the mainstream media. I'm proud to be part of this show. We're learning with every episode, and I hope you'll come back. I'd like now to introduce Mike Pelichek.
Chuck, how are you doing tonight? I guess you're not feeling that great, huh?
No, I'm a little under the weather tonight, but nothing serious.
You're hanging in there. Okay.
That's right.
The weather report from Duluth is it's getting warmer and sloppy big waves on the lake a couple of days ago. I went down and watched those. Chuck, tonight we've got Susan Lindauer and Misty Rowan. We're very excited to be able to have them with us tonight. Susan, I'm not sure quite where she's from. She's from 301 area code. I think that could be Bethesda, Maryland. And Misty's from Minneapolis. And I'm in Duluth. And Chuck's in Fort Lauderdale. And the show's producer is in British Columbia. We're all pretty well spaced out, so I doubt if one killer drone could get us all. Although Chuck almost did get droned earlier in the day, I guess. It's just he's hanging in there. Let's see, the New American Dream. What's this all about? The Obama election, that's when I first started thinking about it, the New American Dream website. Believing in hope, believing in Obama, believing in openness. The idea that there's no wrong questions. That there, you know, we're going to go towards this idea of truth and change. I mean, I went from the idea of being against Bush to saying, okay, I'll be for something. I'll be for Obama, and we would become the type of people, the nation that we always thought we were. But it didn't happen, and we have to ask ourselves why. It's one of those questions that we are allowed to ask. In fact, that we should ask. You have to know that Barack Obama knows the whole truth about the 9/11 attacks. And, you know, I talk about the 9/11 attacks a lot, but they're everything. I mean, they really are in our recent history, in the history of our last 10 years. You listen to a Barack Obama speech and 9/11 means everything, you know. It leads to everything. Well, I think he's complicit. He has lied. He has continued the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan based on a lie. And he knows he's lying. For what reason? Who knows? But based on Nuremberg or common sense or Snoopy or Calvin and Hobbes, Barack Obama is a criminal. I'm not really sure about the term war criminal, as if there is any allowed way to kill. But anyway, just as George Bush and George Bush before him, Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, the whole bunch. And yet they go on living their normal lives. It's wrong and it's frustrating. I really deep down believe in this whole thing. You know, to me, to know the truth about our history is the most important thing, period. And I think if that could happen, I believe the rest takes care of itself. Grows legs, as they say. JFK, RFK, MLK, COINTELPRO, all those alphabets, CIA, here and overseas, Paul Wellstone, Oklahoma City, Waco, Pearl Harbor, the Bush so-called elections, Leonard Peltier, Clinton, and MENA, Arkansas, the whole history of George H.W. Bush, 9/11, and on and on. You know, we really can't really find out if there is a God. You know, I don't know. If there is or not, I don't know. I don't know, but we can't find out. Not yet, anyway. I think that's just kind of beyond our capabilities. But we should be able to know the truth about our own history, here and now. And we don't, by a long way. And that really, really bugs me. Taxes, coming up to tax time, we pay for these lies. This lie that the military protects us, this lie that the USA stands for freedom. this lie that it's okay to kill. And I wonder if we'll ever have the courage to do what the people of Egypt have been doing. It's not because we don't have a reason. It's more in line with, what have we got anything better to do today? The ones with the power desperately depend on our being afraid, and we cannot be afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 Truth Group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
And now on to the news briefs.
From Citizens for Legitimate Government, and just a note about CLG, they've been around for, well, at least since just after the 9/11 attacks, and I just think the world of them. They send out emails. I don't, of course, I've never met any of them. Lori Price is the one who sends out the emails, but they were, I just think, my personally, they've been fairly strong through Wellstone's death and 9/11 attacks and everything. From CLG, Afghan officials allege that 65 civilians were killed in U.S. military operations. Afghan government officials allege that a U.S. military operation in the remote mountains of northeastern Afghanistan killed 65 innocent people, including 22 women and more than 30 children, the most serious allegation of civilian casualties in months. General Petraeus, Afghans are burning their own children alive to blame NATO. That's the headline. General David H. Petraeus suggested at the presidential palace that Afghans caught up in a coalition attack in northeastern Afghanistan might have burned their own children to exaggerate claims of civilian casualties, according to two participants at the meeting. The exact language Petraeus used in the closed-door session is not known, and neither is the precise message he meant to convey, but his remarks about the deadly U.S. military operation in Konar province were deemed deeply offensive by some in the room and also by some in this room here. Remember Waco? The preposterous claim that by the FBI that the people at Waco burned their own children. Petraeus might well find a career in the FBI after he leaves the military. I would imagine they're always looking for liars with impeccable backgrounds. Lori Price at CLG sends out an appeal. Dear readers, CLG needs your help so that we can continue our news service. Write to Lori at lori@legitgov.org. LEGITGOV.org.
Mark Kenney crossed the line at Offutt Air Force Base last August and has been called to federal court in Omaha, Nebraska. Kenny will go to court tomorrow, that's Friday, February 25th, at 2 p.m., for Federal Magistrate Judge Thomas D. Thalkin. Mark has served a 30-day, 45-day, and 2 6-month sentences from prior Offutt line crossings. Judge Thalkin sentenced him to the 2 6-month sentences. Mark has no reason to expect the judge not to sentence him to 6 months again. Mark's a longtime volunteer and friend of the Omaha Catholic worker community. Supporters are asking as many people as can show up in court on February 25th at 2 p.m. to show support for Mark. Anyone who plans to be at the Omaha Federal Courthouse must have a photo ID and cannot have a camera or cell phone that can take pictures in the federal building. Yeah, I wonder why that is. For updates or any questions, contact the Omaha Catholic Worker. Their website, nonukes.org. That's nonukes.org /CWOmaha. Their email is cwomaha@gmail.com, and their phone number is 402-502-5887.
Today, tonight, now, you need to go now. Thursday, the New York City War Resisters League local will continue planning for the March 19th, 8th anniversary of U.S. invasion of Iraq event in Union Square. They'll also discuss plans for the April 8th direct action at the Pentagon, the April 9th mass march in New York City, the April 18th Tax Day event, the April 22nd anti-drone action near Syracuse, among other actions in the spring. So it's tonight, Thursday, February 24th. You're already late. Hurry. 339 Lafayette Street at Bleecker Street in Manhattan. For more information, email nycwrl@att.net.
From Project Hope to abolish the death penalty, an execution alert. The state of Alabama has set March 31st, 2011, as the execution date for William Glenn Boyd. Please contact the governor and let your voices be heard. Contact Governor Robert Bentley, ask him to stay the execution and all others, and to institute a moratorium during which Alabama's capital punishment system could be thoroughly studied and proposals implemented. More information on how to help stop the death penalty in Alabama and everywhere at beester@earthlink.net. That's, or at www.phadp.org.
The $553 billion military budget. Mike Mullen, U.S. Navy Admiral, has said, "The most significant threat to our national security is our debt, because it could threaten future military spending." And if this were this, if this were that '70s show, there would be a laugh track here. Obama seeks to trim $1.1 trillion from the budget in the next 10 years by cutting or eliminating over 200 federal programs, many dedicated to social services and education. For instance, it cuts in half funding to subsidize heating for low-income Americans, limits an expansion of the Pell Grant program for students, and decreases Environmental Protection Agency funding by over 12%. Pick me. I've got an idea. Cut the military. Meanwhile, Republicans are using their new House majority to slash spending even more brutally. The GOP has made it clear that they are bent on raiding funds for Social Security, Medicare, education, determined to kill health care reform and gut needed investments in infrastructure, climate change, and job creation at a time when America needs it at most. These cuts will come on top of very painful austerity measures made at state level across our nation, worth hundreds of billions of dollars since the recession began. And worker solidarity rallies in solidarity with Wisconsin rallies have taken place this past week all around the country at government buildings and state capitals in Juneau, Alaska, Little Rock, Phoenix, Los Angeles, Oakland, Sacramento, San Diego, Denver, Washington, D.C., Hartford, Connecticut, Atlanta, Chicago, Indianapolis, South Bend, Des Moines, Annapolis, Boston, Springfield, Mass., St. Paul, Minn., Duluth, Minn., Helena, Montana, Santa Fe, Trenton, New Jersey, NYC, Raleigh, North Carolina, Carson City, Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada, Canton, Cleveland, and Columbus, Ohio, and Salem, Oregon. Still to come this week, Portland, Oregon, Saturday, February 26, 4 p.m., Pioneer Square. Philadelphia, February 24th, 12 noon, USW headquarters. Saturday, February 25th, Dallas, 10 a.m., 410 South Beckley. Spokane, Washington, Friday, February 25th, 4:30 p.m., the corner of Ruby Division and North River Drive, in front of Wendy's Restaurant. And the Madison, Wisconsin rallies at the State House will continue.
And that's the way it is, February 24th, 2011.
I'd like now to welcome our guest poet of the night, Misty Rowan. Misty is lives in the Uptown region of Minneapolis. She says here, I live in Uptown, I listen to Annie DeFranco, and I voted for Cynthia McKinney in the last presidential election. I am a member of the Anti-War Committee, and in my time that's less than free, I bag groceries at my local foods co-op. I consider poetry to be a performance-based storytelling medium, so most of my stuff is spoken word. To me, art and activism are the same thing. Misty, hello, how are you? Not sure if Misty is there right now. Maybe she's just getting to the line. I have a note here from there. What's happening in Minneapolis? There were raids by the FBI. I'm not sure exactly if they were a year ago or there have been people called to court by a grand jury. I have a news brief here from. It's a Stop FBI Repression panel. It was already held, but it was held in the at the University of Minnesota. While I wait for Misty to come on the line, I'll just go through and read this. Join the Women Student Activists Collective and Students for a Democratic Society for a panel discussion on the FBI's recent attacks, the anti-war and international solidarity movements. Our panelists will include Tracy Mohn, Jess Sundin of the Anti-War Committee, and other local activists who had their homes raided by the FBI and were subpoenaed to appear before a grand jury. Steph Taylor of SDS will facilitate or has facilitated free lunch.
Okay, we have Misty.
Okay, hello, Misty.
Hello.
You're in Uptown. Now, where is that from? Is that from the downtown area?
It's a neighborhood in Minneapolis. I'm from the Twin Cities, and Uptown is, I don't know, just a little corner, I guess, of Minneapolis in general.
Are you a student, or?
No, I was a student briefly there for a while there, but I'm not currently going to any schools. I am a member of the Anti-War Committee, and we do a lot of work with the students at the U of M, specifically students with Students for Democratic Society, SDS, but also we do work with other student groups and, you know, we do a lot of coalition work, so we work a lot with the U of M, but I'm not a student.
Okay. I read something on Al Jazeera just this afternoon. It said how the Egyptian protesters were influenced by political writing over the previous years. Isn't that fascinating? I thought it was, and I just was wondering do you think that could ever happen here, that what we do, what poets and writers do here now could eventually have some type of bearing on the United States of America?
Well, I think what's going on right now in the Middle East is amazing, and that like so many countries are like taking it, like people of those countries are taking it into their hands to like, you know, be the change or whatever, create, you know, this momentum. I don't think that we're at that stage in this country, but I think it does open the question to be like, well, why not? And like, what would it take to get us to that point? And like, it goes a long way to showing that it's possible. And I think that we've got a long way to go in this country as far as like rousing that kind of, like, overall. Certainly there are people that are very unhappy with the way things are going here and are working towards that, but I don't think that it's on like a vast scale as it is, as it has been in Egypt or some of the other countries that are currently in their freedom.
How did you come to be a writer?
Towards that.
Or a poet? Or both?
Sorry? Oh,
Misty?
I didn't hear the question.
Oh, I asked how you came to be a writer and how you came to, when did you discover, when did you start, or when did you decide you had to?
I've always been kind of a fan of language, and I think for me, writing is communication. And I don't know, for me, I think that that your art, you know, the thing that you produce is kind of like your record keeping of your, yes. So like a lot of like what I do, I process that through like writing poetry about it. So it just becomes like, you know, you get all of these external you know, stimuli or whatever, and it's like, this is the world, and you're reacting to it, and so, like, my poetry is, like, kind of my, like, churning that out as my experience, and, like, kind of, like, sharing that with others is, like, you know, in, like, my voice, and, like, my one way that I could say it, because I'm the only perceives things like me, you know? So I mm-hmm. guess that's where I would say I started.
Do you want to talk about the anti-war committee and what's going on there with the FBI? Do you want to get into that now, or do you want to...
I don't know. I mean, I guess I could give kind of a bit of a synopsis about what's going on. The anti-war committee, as a group, has been organizing since the 90s. I haven't been with them that long, but a lot of the core organizers started working with this group called CISPIS that does work around El Salvador at the time. And from that, the anti-war committee grew into its own entity, and they do work, political work, organizing around the war and about stopping the war. And I've worked with them for going on 3 years now, just a little bit before, I got started with them a little bit before the Republican National Convention that was held in St. Paul in 2008. And since then, we've continued to do work around the war and work around, like, you know, women's issues and, like, the war on terror and how, you know, national security is getting, like, used as this whole, you know, this cover-all to do whatever they want with, like, foreign policy. And so since then, I guess more recently we've had a lot more interesting work to do because on September 24th of last year, the FBI raided the homes of several of the members of the committee as well as other members of the anti-war movement locally and nationally. In all total, there were 14 people who were served subpoenas that day, and then since then there were more subpoenas delivered and an even further investigation by the FBI. And they're claiming that they're looking into us on charges of material support to terrorism. So one day we were just, you know, a local group that, you know, organizes protests around the war and tries to get information out about U.S. foreign policy and where, like, you know, government spending goes and, like, how the military spending is actually being used in some of these countries. You know, because people don't know necessarily that, you know, Egypt is the second highest receiver of U.S. Aid, which is, you know, right after Israel is number one and right before Colombia is number three. And like, a lot of the work that we do has to do with, like, you know, these countries and, like, what the U.S.'s policies are around them. So for them to be charging us with terrorism, basically, is kind of a heavy blow. And it's been kind of a whirlwind, honestly, since it happened. And there's been a lot of support. The National Committee to Stop FBI Repression sprang to life out of that initial press conference that was held that day. And has been, I mean, like, we have, you know, hundreds of statements of solidarity from other groups and organizations around the country, and, like, so many organizers and so many people that understand that the attack that the FBI is, kind of this blow that they've dealt to us is basically a blow to the anti-war movement as a whole, and people, you know, even that aren't necessarily anti-war activists understand that, like, this is an attack on our right to have, you know, freedom of assembly and, like, freedom of association and freedom of speech, and that, like, if this is allowed to stand, that, like, this will set the precedent for the government coming after, you know, any group that they want and saying that, well, if you, you know, if you get together and so much as, you know, organize a protest together, that can be considered, you know, an act of terrorism against the government or something like that, and that it's a very serious attack on well, our civil liberties.
How does that stand all night now? Is it as far as the courts or whatever?
As far as with the case?
As far as charges
the jury
or as far as
you mean, like, where does it stand as far as where?
Right, I mean, are people from those raids? Are there people being charged with anything, or how does that stand? Does it stand right now?
Okay. Well, there hasn't been any statements. No one has been charged with anything. Not actually admitted to any particular target in this investigation. They haven't given us any information. They haven't given us most of our stuff back. Like, they took boxes and boxes of stuff out of the homes of these particular activists. And recently they returned, like, a cell phone and, like, I don't know, I think a computer or something like that. But they're holding it all as evidence against us, and they've subpoenaed a grand total of 23 people so far to appear in front of a grand jury, and so far we're sort of at a stalemate with them, which is that the people who have been subpoenaed have refused to testify. They've invoked their Fifth Amendment right to remain silent, and short of being called back to testify again, we're kind of just waiting for the next step from them, essentially. But certainly people are, certainly people's livelihoods are on the line, and there are three people in specific whose original subpoenas have been reactivated. The grand jury would specifically like to talk to Tracy Mulm, Ann Pham, and Sarah Martin, who are the three subpoenaed activists who have been called back. But we don't know when, we don't know when they are going to, like, come back for them. Also, we don't know when indictments, which they have assured us, you know, that they are intending to press some criminal charges. They just haven't told us who. Anyway, so we're waiting on that, basically. But in the meantime, we're not just waiting around. We're trying to tell people about the case, and we're trying to, you know, get this information out about grand juries and how they're used to repress, you know, political movements, and, you know, how the FBI has been using the Patriot Act and Homeland Security as, like, a free-for-all, you know, to basically just do whatever they want, to, like, look into whoever they want, to, like, accuse anyone that they please of, you know, well, I mean, of, they're specifically saying that we're sending material support to terrorists, but to basically say that, like, anything that disapproves of the government or is in any way dissenting is somehow a threat to national security. So we've got a lot of support, and we're doing a lot of work, you know, like, with, like, legislators, and, like, try to talk to, like, you know, senators, and, like, you know, get someone to, you know, say something about this on, like, a bigger scale. And, you know, we've had national call-in days to call President Obama and tell him to call this off, and to call Eric Holder of the FBI and the Attorney General Patrick Fitzgerald, who is running the investigation, and call it off, and to tell them to, you know, like, you know, that to, like, step back and, like, you know, basically, like, stop attacking the anti-war movement for disagreeing with the government and its foreign policies.
Missy, would you like to share some of your poems with us?
Okay, yeah. So I guess I was going to start with a poem that I wrote specifically about this case and what's going on. To be clear, I have not received a subpoena, but one of the several subpoenas that did come down was for the anti-war committee itself. So it's, like, the group that I work with, and it was our office. Of the raids that originally happened, they were all of people's homes, except for it was also our office that was raided, and they took our computers and, you know, like, all of our checkbooks and our files and things like that. So we also found out that we were infiltrated by an agent of the FBI who was coming around for, like, 2 years saying that she was an organizer just like us, and she was actually spying on us and, like, reporting back. And so it was really eerie to be a part of the group after everything went down, and to, like, continue to meet at that office. And, you know, I mean, compromised. It was, you know, we were obviously being watched, and it was possibly bugged and all this other stuff. So I wrote this kind of in response to, like, my own closeness, I guess, to the case. But it's called An Open Letter to the FBI. Okay. An open letter to the FBI. Fuck you guys. Fuck you for Fred Hampton, Leonard Peltier, and my friends, the 14, wait now, 19, check that, 23 too many to name that you're after right now. I just want to know how many times you have directly interfered with peace and justice in this country. I want to know how many lives. And I want to talk about it. I want our stuff back. Fuck, I want our spy back. She did the grunt work around here, and I've never seen my tax dollars so well spent. I want to talk about your budget, FBI, gone on check since 9/11, tailing peace activists just to build the time and tapping phones and raiding homes? Looking for what? Proof that we disapprove of this government? Well, we haven't been at all shy about that, have we? We show up on your Capitol lawns with our signs and our banners and our bullhorns, and we scream at your buildings from behind your police lines. I guess I should feel honored to have this much of your attention. Tear gas in my eyes and all. Those plastic zip-tie handcuffs as they round us up like cattle, and now the heat is really coming down because it was never a fair battle and the grand jury inquisition has begun. It's some of that good old-fashioned McCarthyism, except now the red tag term is terrorism. Meanwhile, the real war criminals are accepting awards. Those torturers and wiretappers patting each other's backs at the podium. Anyway, fuck them. I came here to talk to you, to ask what the hell we're going to do now that they're kicking in doors in Dinkytown looking for dissenters. They're taking down posters off the walls calling it evidence to be used against us, and you're next if you don't think so. Anybody left with an opinion? Anybody here consider themselves outspoken? I am talking to you. So here's a quick history lesson in FBI repression. John Lennon. They tried to deport him, did you know that, for speaking out against the war? It was right before the Republican National Convention of 1972, and Nixon was afraid it was going to cost him re-election. So they tried to kick him out of the country for having a concert. You see, they were afraid of a concert. Dr. Martin Luther King's home was raided by the FBI. Now we're on to something. He received threats and harassment from them for half his Nobel Peace Prize-deserving career and was, in the end, assassinated. I read that he was under surveillance when it happened, that undercover police watched from across the street as King was shot, but they couldn't kill the dream he started dreaming, and we are still coming, ready or not. And I do mean ready or not. So give it up for the RNC 8. You know, we've got a real movement in this state, and in case you haven't noticed, it's going on right now. And hold your breath for the Peaceful Three, whose reactivated subpoenas are hanging over all our heads. Don't be silent. Tell everyone you can about this. Go to StopFBI.net and get involved. Call the president and tell him to call it off. We said end the war, end the witch hunt, defend the First Amendment. Enough is enough. No more attacks on them, and no more attacks on us. Okay, and then I guess I just wanted to do one that's kind of an older piece that's kind of like where I got started with the group and like where this all began for me, which is a few years old now, but it's called Civil Disobedience, My First Arrest in Front of Senator Coleman's Office on April 3rd of 2007. When they came, they gave us peace signs, the honkers and the smiling, waving parade types. I returned the smile because I knew what we were up to and I knew it was going to, you know, change some minds. We brought some of our own signs, and thinking about it now, I wish mine said, "This traffic jam brought to you by the war in America." And then we took the street, stepping out in front of SUVs with barricades and cones to wait for the police and watching as they're realizing that we won't move unless someone makes us. They got a little anxious about the possibility that this was happening. Sitting there in cars, crunched to a halt, their daily commute intruded upon by an occupation of war, and on their cell phones, I saw the conversations begin, traveling out by satellite, an idea like a wake-up call. Their expressions, disbelief, and dispositions to reject me as a nuisance in their otherwise unchallenged lives of misinformation and outright lies. They paid attention, all right. But some paid with their lives, and I did not apologize for bringing that to light in the street the day we made a parking lot audience of the passers-by. But go ahead, call that a crime. Okay, and then I guess I just was going to do, I have this kind of new one that's kind of my summation, I guess, of a lot of things that I think are going on, not just with the anti-war movement necessarily, but with, like, you know, America and, like, I don't mean it for it to be, like, such an overall list of complaints, but it's kind of my opinions on everything, and this one's called The Huff and Puff of My Frustration. It's not fair. If I were to punch you as hard as I could, I would sprain my wrist. You would maybe I reduce myself to tears, so instead I use my words, and I'll tell you one thing. This mouth never got me in a fight it didn't write in the fuck get me back out of. You see, I said I use my words instead, and it's been working so far. But they're bailing out the banks, those leeches with their fees, so the question then becomes, how much is your money worth? Depends. How much have you got? Not a lot? Oh, that's okay, baby girl. You two could still be president. Just get in line, and we'll call you. And in the meantime, try and find a job worth a damn to do, because the rent is due, and you're not getting any younger. And these cards aren't exactly stacked in your favor. I said get a clue, and pay attention, because the undercurrent is ever-changing in its direction, and you want to stay ahead of that game. You want that spot on top of the food chain, don't you? Everybody's so busy looking out for number one, and then they wonder why they feel so all alone. So many skin and bones will the top 1% clench their law enforcement fist so tight that you have the right to work until you die in this country, and that's about it. Now pay your bills and buy some shit. Check your credit score. And it gets harder to ignore when they're coming right for you, but these folks, they just don't care anymore. You can change the channel if it bores you. Me, I threw up my TV. People got to tell me when I'm on it. People got to explain the whole commercial because I never catch the reference. Man, I got better things to see. And I understand that time is precious. Mine is spent in reverence of this life because I am in love with it. I'm in love with it. I need to learn how to slow down and appreciate this moment, this one, because it's all there is, and then I'm off again, forgetting, and I'm looking up again, and I'm searching for the lines that I had memorized so that I could think about something else. Sometimes I feel helpless, like I have a needle but no thread, so it's no good. I can only manage the damage. Sometimes I'm the subject of the charade, and some days I'm just its contents, that is displayed as a series of statistics, and yes, I am sometimes why. So what of it, and what difference does it make when you die? Well, I want a government that practices something like the take-a-penny, leave-a-penny system, and there will come a day that rain or shine type of activism, the committed who don't shed their tears but collect them, weaving them into meaningful tales. We tell each other stories of bravery and compassion to keep ourselves warm, to keep our hearts burning. And I'll tell you another thing. It's you, me, and everybody. So don't go making enemies because you can't win. Instead, it's time to start talking to these strangers, our neighbors. It's time to start caring for each other again. Call it community. Call it permaculture. Call it revolution if you want to. Just get on it. 10 years ago would have been a good place to start. Now we'll do. Or at least I think we can all agree that now is the very best we can do. So come with me and take heart. I got some New Year's resolutions and a good idea where to start. I got some friends on the inside, the outside, the flip side, and the best part is that you decide your place in this world. You decide. So let's start. Because to build the world, all you really got to do is your part. And that's kind of what I had today.
Thank you very much, Misty. Those are really cool. Is there anywhere that people can go to take online or to see your poetry?
I have a blog that you could read the words word for word for. It's misstetree.blogspot.com. I could spell that if you want me to. Sorry?
Yeah, go ahead and spell that so we can go to that.
Yeah. So it's misstetree, which is three words and no spaces, is MISSTREE. .blogspot.com. And it's not really much of a blog, but it does have all of those poems and more that are, you know, typed out so you can actually read them. I don't know if it was a little too fast, if you could understand everything that I was saying exactly, but anyway, there's a copy, like a physical copy that you could read.
It was very good. Thank you for taking time to read your poems and talk to us tonight, Misty. And thanks for all you're doing in Minneapolis, too. And I hope that you'll have time to come back and read some more poems to us sometime.
Absolutely. This is great. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you, and have a good night, okay?
This portion of tonight's program is being brought to you by the Underpants Bomber, the DC Sniper, the Times Square Fizzler, and the Al-Qaeda Conclave Mosque Corn Palace of Mitchell, South Dakota. Allah is great. Allah is great. Most awesome. How's it going? We're new to your country. We want to kill you and take your W-2 sports software. Our high-rise lairs are too, how you say it? More of dude caves. Not too gnarly, not cool for bowling. For make benefit, glorious nation of Kebabistan. Death to Peyton Manning, NASCARs, and WWF. We come from a very organized, well-kept, well-swept cave in the mountains of Afghanistan. Far up, sheep nosebleed section. We did 9/11 and other things like the 93 World Trade Center bombing, Beirut Marine Barracks, bombing, for sure. Lots of other stuff we did, yeah. We're not the FBI or CIA, huh? That's for sure. For sure you'd be a silly person who does not fit in your neighborhood to think so. We have nothing to do with George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George Bush, the senior one who sits in the front row at the World Series with his pig-resembling wife, or Obama bin Laden. Oy vey. Barack Obama. Thank you very much. Happy times. Have a good day. Please just stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. Keep it real. Be always awesome.
Tonight's show is also being sponsored by Wawa Wewa of Nebraska. You're in good hands with Wawa Wewa. For make benefit, glorious nation of Nebraska-stan. And additional funding is also provided by GoBarbaraBush.com, as well as the United States Navy, Global Force for Good, the United States Army, Be All You Can Be, United States Air Force, Peace Is Our Profession, and the United States Marines, the few, the proud, the brave, because you can't handle the truth.
And now it's time for our special interview with Susan Lindauer. Susan has quite a history. She was an asset for the CIA, and then she ended up being the second non-Arab American indicted on the Patriot Act. And the Patriot Act is what we're going to talk about today. There's a lot of wrongful conclusions that the surveillance only impacts overseas communications, but that is flat wrong. Susan has told me she wants to talk about how they used it against the Maryland activists connected to the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, the D.C. Anti-War Network, Amnesty International, and even anti-death penalty activists. The Patriot Act is a weapon for attacking legitimate free political speech that contradicts government policy. Susan, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be on. It's great to talk with you. I thank you for the introduction. I am the second non-Arab American ever indicted on the Patriot Act, and even in the worst nightmares of the activist community, progressive and moderate and conservative, if you're a free-thinking American, whatever your political background, you need to be afraid of this law, because it is the ideal weapon to smash whistleblowers and to imprison dissidents of any political stripe.
Well, that's the Patriot Act certainly
is one of... For example, people are not aware, they don't understand... My father is a... I'm actually a progressive. From my background, you might think that I'm more of a conservative, but I'm actually a progressive. And I was an anti-war activist and an anti-sanctions activist. And the United States government co-opted me under the Clinton administration and asked me to establish a back channel for communications with Libya and Iraq, which were two nations under sanctions. And at the time, the sanctions were killing off the children of Iraq, and I wanted to do something about that. I wanted to try to make a difference so that we could figure out a way to make these sanctions go away. So I went to the Iraqis and to the Libyans, and I told them, you know, that the United States had asked me to do this, and they were, these guys, the Arab governments were totally conscious of my identity from the first day that I walked into their embassy. They may have been surprised, but they decided that they would appreciate an opportunity for dialogue, and that dialogue would be very positive, even though it would be covert in the Western media. So, you know, we did not advertise this in on the Western side of it, but it was always happening, and it was a very good thing. I knew too much. I knew about the 9/11 warnings. I knew about Iraq's efforts to contribute to the 9/11 investigation. I knew about a comprehensive peace framework that would have resolved the entire conflict with Iraq without firing a shot. Nobody had to die. There was a democracy initiative from Baghdad. Everything that we wanted to achieve, we could achieve without war. And this was, and it would have been very positive. And so when they decided to rewrite history, I was in the way. And so the Patriot Act was deployed against me, and they resorted to secret charges and secret evidence, secret grand jury testimony. These things are now allowed by the Patriot Act. I was subjected to two warrantless searches, where the government just came into my house and went through my possessions and took whatever they wanted to take. Even evidence of my innocence was considered classified, and so the government had no obligation to admit that I was telling the truth.
You ended up spending a year in prison for that, or
Carswell Air Force Base without a trial, without a hearing. One day I was summoned. I had been free on bail, a $500,000 bail, and one day after 18, with no hearings at all, no meetings, nothing, and after 18 months of just waiting for the government to do something, I was summoned into court and ordered to surrender to prison. And they had decided, and this is very ominous, it has strong parallels to Bradley Manning. They had decided that I was, quote, incompetent to stand trial on the basis that I had a 95% belief that I would be acquitted of the charges, and therefore I did not appreciate the gravity of the charges against me. Another psychiatrist had declared that my desire to prove my innocence of the allegations by pursuing witnesses and leads qualified as a mental defect, and therefore, as long as I requested a trial, it was signs of a defect that should disqualify me from having one.
Well, there's a catch-22 for you.
Kafkaesque. It's very, very serious. And when I see what they're doing to Bradley Manning, it's the same thing. I was accused of knowing... I had information about Iraq that they did not want anybody to hear. And so they... And you will all remember how, you know, George Bush and the Republicans beat up the intelligence community and the assets, saying we were, quote, incompetent. We had failed. We had provided bad intelligence that deceived and misled Congress into following the president off into war, which would be such a disaster. And if only the assets had spoken up, if only somebody had told them that it was wrong, they would have been, you know, they would have wisened up and diverted our nation from this catastrophe. The only problem with that was that I did go to them, and thanks to the irony is thanks to the Patriot Act, there were 28,000 phone calls recorded and 8,000 emails recorded and hundreds of captured faxes to congressional offices that are date and time stamped, which show that I told Congress that there would be a $1.6 trillion war deficit, I put it at that, which turned out to be about correct. I told them that democracy would throw power to the fundamentalists, away from moderate Arab governments. I told them that Iran would rise as a regional power and that Al-Qaeda would seize, you know, that Osama bin Laden would rise from his grave of seclusion and charismatic young jihadis would emerge who would take over his, who would bring the Al-Qaeda movement into Iraq. And of course, all these things happened. But then Congress wanted to reinvent itself as a victim, and so they attacked me.
Well, politics is certainly a mess, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it is. It's a mess. But what we, you know, for all of those people who were concerned about Bradley Manning, you know, There's a real danger here because I was accused of being incompetent because I asked for a trial. Bradley Manning, they're starting to say, is incompetent, and they're using the same line of attack on him. They're starting to say that he's incompetent because he, quote, has Asperger's syndrome, which is a form of autism, and yet he was involved in military intelligence. How could he have gotten into military intelligence if he was suffering from some kind of mental defect like that? And the answer is that it's probably false. They can make up anything about you they want. And some people, the worrisome thing is that some people are going to say, oh, as long as they're getting the government out of the case, it's okay to do this to him. And a lot of people are going to fall for that. But in fact, it gets to be very dangerous if you start bringing people up on charges and refusing to give them a trial. And it is offensive to our democracy, like all get out, if you say that people who disagree with you have something wrong with their thinking, and therefore they're mentally defective because you don't like their politics. You see?
Yes, that's dictatorial.
Bradley Manning had, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I was going to say, that method of operating smacks of dictatorship. Hey, you don't disagree with me, I'll lock you up.
Exactly.
If you don't agree with me,
it's
I'll lock you up.
Straight out of a Soviet gulag system.
Yeah.
It's something Joseph Stalin would do. But unfortunately, we are now moving into a McCarthy era politics. Mm. But we are starting to do that right here, and that is a very scary thing. And the Patriot Act is what's making it possible. And they can, under the Patriot Act, they can detain you indefinitely. I was threatened. I was first, according to federal law, they could only detain me for 4 months because I was, quote, nonviolent, non-threatening to myself or others. And so the maximum that they could hold me on an incompetence finding was 4 months. Well, once they got me in there, the Justice Department petitioned the court for the right to hold me indefinitely up to 10 years with no trial. And, of course, during the whole time, they applied psychological pressure on me, threatening me, trying to get me to agree to plead guilty in exchange for a finding of competence. And then I would still have, you know, several years in prison, but the government would be spared the trial. So it was like I was threatened with either incompetence and indefinite detention or a guilty plea, and then I could be found competent to accept the guilty plea, but I would be subjected to an unknown number of years in prison, which could be like 4 or 5 years. It would be up to the judge in sentencing. So it was a very dirty thing to do, and the psychological pressure that I was under, I grieve for Bradley Manning. I was in my 40s at the time. I was like 42 at the time. And Bradley Manning's 23. And the difference is, but the age difference meant that I have had more maturity and more life experience to draw from to protect myself. And even then, it was terrifying. If I was a kid right out of school, that would be just horrible. That would just be, it would just be terrifying. You know, because to be denied a trial is the most frightening thing ever.
It's just totally wrong. Isn't it convenient that if you were to choose to go along with their game and plead guilty, then they could find you competent, but not if you were trying to defend yourself, trying to do something about it, and that was a mental illness.
Yes.
It's just crazy.
And it was interesting because they ruled that the desire for a trial, the desire to pursue witnesses and leads, in itself qualified as a mental defect. And people presumed that, you know, I must have done something like, you know, psychotically. I must have some history of mental illness or something. See, usually in incompetence, there would be, you'd have Alzheimer's disease, or you'd have some kind of schizophrenia, or you'd have some kind of, you know, something would be wrong with you, and you would be a non-functioning human being. But that's not the case. And this is, it's actually a legal definition that has to do with whether or not you can assist your attorney in preparing a defense. And so what they said was the desire to have my attorney interview my witnesses qualified as a defect. I mean, that's a very scary thing.
Yes, it certainly is. Well, I'm afraid we're about out of time now, but this has been very interesting, and I learned quite a bit about this incompetence
attack
that they're using. I think I might like, I'm going to study that, and I might like to talk to you again about that. I hope they'll come visit us again sometime in the future, and thank you.
I would love to come on again. And again, for all of you people who are out there, Bradley Manning needs our support. And let me just, please, if I may, close by saying that the only reason that I was freed was because of the blowback from the alternative radio was huge, had a huge disproportionate impact, because the mainstream media, the Washington Post, the New York Times, took the government line and said, oh, if they're saying this about her, there must be some truth to it. So the mainstream media was totally against me, but it was only the alternative radio and the blogs, the internet, that stood by me and questioned it. But the act of questioning it forced them to back down. So this will have an impact, but we have to show them that we are not going away. We are paying attention, and we're going to hold them accountable for it.
All right, listeners, hear that, and remember to make noise, because it helps.
Yes.
Susan, yes? I believe that you just you have a book out. Maybe you'd like to tell our listeners about it before you leave.
Sure. My book is called Extreme Prejudice, The Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-Ups of 9/11 in Iraq. And you can get that on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. That's the best way. And it is, I'm told it's a page-turner. I'm hearing from people that they're reading it two and three times. And it's a spy thriller. It's not an academic book for foreign policy wonks. It's a very engaging book, but it will tell you the real story of the warnings about 9/11, the real story that you've never heard before about the peace option with Iraq, and it goes inside the Iraqi embassy to reveal actual conversations with Iraqi diplomats, and it'll blow your mind, and it goes inside prison on a Texas military base and describes some of the most horrific scenes that you would ever have imagined. And so I urge everybody to, I hope everybody will pick that up.
Well, thank you. I know I'm going to look for it myself.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, well, have a great night.
You too. Mike?
Well, Chuck, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. The weather is starting to break, but always looming. It's always hanging over our heads. It's the sword of Damocles of one more big blast. And so we really cannot celebrate the ice and snow melting because we know it can always get worse, which was rule number one in the Baltimore Catechism, the blue book of Catholicism, which taught us to mistrust good fortune like snow melting or the cost of gasoline going down one or two pennies. Stephanie Moorman is from Mount Liberty. She graduated from Mount Liberty Senior High School in 1972 after having switched over from public from St. Cynthia's in 8th or 9th grade, more or less because everyone else was doing it. She went on to Wayne State College. She earned a teaching degree and then left to go get a job in Iowa, the progressive state to the east, the one that used to be famous for 6-on-6 girls high school basketball, and the whole state kind of just evoked a sense of having gone on a couple more years in school. And the Des Moines Register, when it was a real newspaper, well, it was like a phylum difference when compared to the Omaha World Herald or the local Wednesday Miracle. Growing up in the four corners of Nebraska, South Dakota, Iowa, and Minnesota, Stephanie developed certain general ideas about the people in the different states. For example, if a presidential candidate came through town, the folks in Nebraska would not notice unless he or she carried with them in their entourage a member of the Cornhuskers football team. The people in South Dakota would notice and recognize and understand, but they would not mention it at supper. The people of Minnesota would wonder if the candidate had 10,000 lakes in his or her state and forests and professional sports team and a major metropolitan central metroplex thing and the green mill. And if not, which was not likely, then what's the big deal? The folks in Iowa would walk up to the candidate, shake his or her hand, and hold the door for their entire entourage as they all entered the cafe together. Then they would sit down and talk and have pie and go on to the next thing. It was like that one football coach told his players that when you get to the end zone, act like you've been there before. So that was where Stephanie wanted to go, and that's where she was. She went to where the earth was deep, deep black like new tires. She married an Iowa husband, had Iowa kids, and taught at a small Catholic school in St. Smith in the north central part of the state, Sweet Jesus in Heaven Junior Senior High School. And last week they did get a Catholic snowstorm, the I told you so big blast from the past. Don't count your chickens, to look out because you've got nothing coming, fool, variety. And because of that storm, Stephanie now realizes there is nothing more cozy than a parabolic space heater facing you while you're sitting on the toilet, and just 3 feet away it is 7 below and falling. And she thinks she might keep that space heater in the bathroom for a while longer and then take it with her to the nursing home. We are now in the season of the moon of the melting deer in ditches, thanks to Henry Ford, deer in demented poses that they have held death masks all winter are now being revealed by the melting snow. Stephanie can't look, so now she pays extra special attention to her driving. Her husband is a hunter. She didn't know that about him until the fall of the first year they were married. Steve did not have to go to work either the morning after the snowstorm. In years past, they would have run up to the school, plowing and falling through the big drifts, laughing to spend the day in her classroom. He helping her cut out stuff and just spend a relaxing day in the school alone, maybe stopping by the cafe for a later lunch and a beer on the way home. This morning, Steve was still sleeping after Stephanie finished her coffee and raspberry oat bagel. She got a text message from three teacher friends to meet them up at the bowling alley for a good old-fashioned snow day of bowling, pictures of Bud Light and karaoke in the bar. Stephanie says, no, you go ahead. She said that three times, and then she shut her phone off. She teaches world history and wonders now if it should have been creative writing or English. She coaches basketball and track and should retire, and then maybe she'll do something different. Maybe she'll be a writer someday. Writing is always someday, so super something easy to put off. Stephanie took her laptop upstairs and found her favorite almost writing spot in the small bedroom with a pitched ceiling, so you can't really do anything in there but lie down or sit down. She pulled her chair up to the window overlooking the snowfield that has baseball players in the spring and summer and soccer families in the fall. She walked lightly up the stairs, now hoping Steve might sleep just a little while longer, maybe give her a chance to pull off this velvet revolution. It's an idea that she's had for maybe ever. She felt excited, frightened, a lump formed in her throat as if she had chosen on the spur of the moment to jump the Berlin Wall, and now she realized she had stupidly stumbled her way into a fight-or-flight, do-or-die Super Bowl moment. Stephanie sat down, opened up new message in her email program, and began to write. She was actually writing. Someday had become today. She looked up quickly to see outside the water dripping past the window, the snow on the field, the swing set and shed. She rested her fingers on the keyboard. She had all the teacher emails and accumulated friends, and then there's always Facebook, her page, and Steve's, and even the kids, as if she really wanted to go crazy. She would have an audience. Did she really want it? She looked out the window and removed her hands from the white machine. She reached without looking and pulled the Marlboro Lights pack and matches and lit up. She drew it down and blew the smoke out and kept looking out the window. Writing doesn't do anything. Nobody reads, and even if they do, they only read like about three fiction authors in the whole country over and over. But for sure, you sitting down up there and taking time out of your day and mine and not getting a damn thing done except some kind of self-absorbed mental onanism, it's just wrong. You can't change anything by writing. You're too old. You're not good enough. It would take too long. You don't know enough about it. How would you ever get it published, let alone in any bookstores? Who's going to read it? Just think about that. There should be your answer right there. Letting the cigarette dangle from her lips like an old-time big city reporter on Deadline, she wrote. She was writing, and so she was a writer. The big idea that she had been writing in her head up and down the hall, sitting in the teacher's lounge at the kitchen table, cutting her meatloaf with a fork for years and years, poured out of her head like a bulging water balloon poked with a sharp pin at an outdoors birthday party. Hello, all. It's an Iowa snow day, so let's take advantage of it. The Iowa Russian novel, Winter, All We Need Is More Vodka Reading Series. The United States is now the Soviet Union. It's called the American Union. The weather in Iowa is cold. The landscape reads like a Russian novel. All we need is more vodka. Please send vodka to Iowa this winter. Now that Iowa and the United States are entering their totalitarian era, keep in mind the first circle, Vladimir Voinovich, with monumental propaganda and the life and extraordinary adventures of Private Ivan Chonkin. Finally, reading and writing make sense in Iowa and the U.S. and A. Finally, we have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra. Finally, we can make a difference by reading and writing the truth, because the newspapers and television and radio are now so obviously not telling the truth. It is a perfect ironic situation. The only really way for this to happen was that we hit rock bottom. We cannot say the truth. Your relatives, your chair at Thanksgiving dinner will suddenly be empty. Your relatives have sent you to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. We are there. Now let us begin. okay here. Scooch up to the samovar, maybe leave your hat and boots on, fill your peasant hands with a warm drink, and listen for the sound of hoofbeat on the ice. Ni bis back oitis. Don't worry, be happy. Okay then, picture you are in third period American history, things we should have all known all along but never will hear mentioned in the United States high school history class. If Americans knew their real history rather than the nursery rhyme Disneyland version, George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush would not be able to ride together at a golf court down the third baseline at an American baseball game to the cheers of the crowd. Rather, they would be greeted with tomatoes, fists, and handcuffs. Okay. For make benefit the glorious state of Iowa in the smack dab middle of the American Union.
And I laugh. There's a photo on the internet that makes me laugh. A little brown boy holding a silent scream forever in four color. Huh. Horrified little fellow now has no arms or legs or brothers, sisters, or parents. I laugh out loud. I laugh at the Marines being all they could possibly be in God's creation at their tough man commercials. The Army of One, what a hoot. The rough guy coaches and players who let this boy die, what comedy watching him feel strong while letting the real battles be fought by little guys with sticks and bicycles. The boy has a bandaged head. He looks so scared his hair might turn white as in a Hitchcock film. It sort of makes me chuckle. I laugh at the ministers here in town, here on this TV saying, bless our troops as they defend our freedom. I laugh at the well-schooled and coiffed newspaper columnists with their earnest close-crop photos in 400 papers read by 40 million people in 40 million cities, and I laugh. The boy is flat on his back on dirty cement, with his stubs hastily wrapped in ace bandages, surrounded by the world trying to get a look, by photographers, and people on their way to work and out to dinner. We're nothing, nothing, nothing. This boy now has no arm, no legs. Nothing we do today will mean a thing because we've ripped the arms and legs from this boy as if he was a fly and we are us. This boy who could be my boy, lying there at the feet of the world looking the other way. God damn us. Please, give us what we deserve. If you're a just God, rain down fire and hell upon our heads. Lightning bolts on our backyard decks. Rivers of excrement down our smooth, well-scrubbed streets. Please, dear God, we pray. When I woke this morning, I thought it essential to the world order and being right and a good person that I shave, help out with the dishes, be on time, drive on the right side of the road. Do a good job. Be pleasant. Smile. But now I just can't stop laughing. The world thinks it still matters, and that's kind of funny in a way. There. The flag flying over the Catholic elementary school. The yellow ribbons tied to light poles on both sides of Main Street. Stray cats wearing yellow ribbons around their necks. Roaming the night, looking both ways before crossing the street as if it mattered. You're never so wrong as when you damage a young boy. We sit down here like the Who's in Whoville, celebrating the coming of war season, while this boy lies on the cold floor. T-E-E.
Stephanie lit another cigarette and looked out the window and waited. Then she read through her piece again. She heard noises and a voice downstairs, and she lit another cigarette. She hurried through spell check, found her address book and pasted and loaded the BCC. Not the CC. People get angry. They will say you spammed them as if an extra email will give them polio. She heard footsteps on stairs. Steph? Stephanie? She looked at her message and her heart beat, and she read parts of it again. She smiled. She hit send. She pushed back from the table, put her feet on the table, and pulled a long drag. "Steph, what are you doing up here?" "Oh, nothing," she mumbled. She smiled wide at the water now cascading from the roof, past the window. The sun elbowed its way through thick cloud cover. She was a rider. "What? What are you doing?" She turned and put her feet on the floor and faced him. "Riding," she smiled. "That's the news from Mount Liberty, Nebraska, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the journalists are about average."
Kennedy's head went over. But the reason his head went over is because the echo went by the motorcade on the left, and he went, "What was that?"
So there. We have figured it out. Go back to bed, America. Your government has figured out how it all transpired. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here's American Gladiators. Watch this. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here's American Gladiators. Here is 56 channels of it. Watch these pituary retards bang their fucking skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom. Here you go, America. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
Oh, good. Honey, I heard on the news that they figured out that the gun, what happened is that there is an echo and that Kennedy was asking Jackie what it was, and that's why his head flew up. Honey, what time's Gladiators on? Are we missing it?
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
New from U.S. author Mike Palachuk, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Palachuk reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging the complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever on the move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly, because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachuk's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Palachuk writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Palachuk. The website again, newamericandream.info.